Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan. Every Saturday morning, it's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Terry takes you inside the outdoors. You know, hunting, fishing, camping. It's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Now, here's Terry.
Good morning on this beautiful day in the Rocky Mountains. Unusually warm. We're going to talk about during the course of this next hour and a half. Because of the Air Force game today, so we'll be a little bit of an abbreviated show, but we're going to talk a lot of fishing. I'm sure we're going to touch on some hunting as we go through the day, too, because there's a lot going on. But it's an unusual transition. We had an unusual spring transition where it stayed cold and wet. That affected the fishing, both conventional and fly. And then it got extremely hot July and August and stayed warm, and we're above seasonal temperatures. But I think that's about to change. We're going to get into some great, great fishing, and we're going to talk about that. In fact, let's go right to the phones now. And we're joined by somebody who is full of all that fishing knowledge, one of our favorite contributors, somebody who is my original fill-in host and still fills in occasionally, Chad LaChance. Good morning, Chad.
Hey, good morning, Terry. How's it going this morning?
You know, it's going okay, and I know you were talking to Karen, which I hate to interrupt, but we do have to do a show. But I was saying that it's been an unusual year. And we're going to get into that during the course of this hour several times. We had a late, cold, wet spring, and then it got extremely hot for a couple months. And we're kind of warm going into fall, and that's going to affect fishing. But before we get to that, before we talk about that, you went to a trip to, if people follow my Facebook page, Terry Wickstrom Outdoors, that I go to a couple times a year. And you discovered why I love to go bass fishing up in Minnesota, didn't you?
Yeah, I learned that the good way. You know, went up with a mutual friend of ours, Steve Panaz. Listeners may be familiar with that name. I actually had him on last time I guest hosted Terry Wickstrom Outdoors for you. Had him on the radio. Steve Panaz is a freshwater fishing Hall of Famer and been there, done that kind of guy. Host of Lake Commandos Television and just a great guy. And he and I met at ICAST. He invited me to come fish with him in Minnesota. And so couldn't resist an invite like that. Jumped on a plane and flew up there and just had an absolutely fantastic time. And I think the single biggest thing to take away from it, besides the sheer volume of water, is from anglers, from the perspective of your listeners here, is all those lakes are natural and all of our lakes are reservoirs. And that's a fundamental difference in how you approach the fishing and everything else and the fertility of the lakes and lots of other stuff. But what a fantastic place to fish. I can see why you and Dan Swanson and some of the others lament over not being there more often.
Well, you know, it's a tremendous, the fisheries up there, and whatever you fish for, bass, walleyes, lake trout, panfish, the panfishing up there, the crappies, right now getting into the fall crappie bite up there. It is just unbelievable. Now, we got some great fishing in Colorado. We're going to talk about that during this hour, and you can catch a lot of fish, but it's a really unique place. The one thing I wanted to kind of hit a little bit of, though, for people looking for a summer trip, you know, everybody thinks walleyes up there. They think if they're going to fish bass, they need to go to Texas or Florida or you know, maybe one of the southern states. But I'll tell you what, it's hard to beat a good bass fishing trip up Minnesota. Tell people the kind of fish you caught up there and the numbers.
Well, yeah, you know, they're northern strain largemouth as opposed to the Florida strains, which are famous down south. And that's a minor difference, you know, in lingo, except for it's a fundamental difference in how the fish play. The northern strain bass are way more cooperative. They know they have a short growing season. They know they have to be aggressive. And they're just extremely, extremely cooperative, I found, compared to bass in the south, you know. And I grew up in Florida. Bass fishing down there is fantastic, but those are the moodiest fish you have ever seen. And, yeah, you can catch some giants, but you can also get your tail handed to you a lot. And any bass pro will tell you that. But if you go to Minnesota, what I found there is they were just very willing fish. And you're not going to catch a 10-pounder, but you'll catch a whole bunch of fours and fives. And in any place, I don't care where you go in the country, if you can catch 4-pounders consistently, you're having a pretty good bass day. And it felt more like Florida than it did Minnesota in terms of the fishing, because we were fishing heavy vegetation. We were fishing cattails and lily pads and coontail and milfoil, very, very, very lush, dense vegetation. And that makes for some really productive water. And for an old school bass guy that likes to have the, you know, the goat rope and the big stick in your hand, that is a fun way to go about fishing. And you're going to laugh, Terry, but I managed to break one off on a hook set on 65-pound braid way back in the cattails.
Yeah, it's. I don't want to dwell on it too much longer because I want to get to what's going on around here. But I will tell you, folks, I do at least one, if not two or three trips to Minnesota every year. And sometimes one's a nice fishing trip. And then we do split up because there's great walleye and pike fishing. And I try to get back for the pan fishing when it's good there. But that's because it's my home. We got great fishing here. But if you want experience and especially if you're learning bass, Chad, what a great place to go with a knowledgeable fisherman up there. And you will learn how to fish cover because you'll have action.
Yeah, lots and lots of access. And it is a really good deal. And you know, you mentioned a little bit of the diversity you touched on, and I won't dwell on it, but we caught, I think, 8 or 9 species while we were targeting bass. So, and that includes, Steve hooked even a muskie from his own dock while we're sitting on the side of the lake having a beverage in the evening. So, it's a great place to fish, no doubt about it. But like you said, Colorado's got our share outdoor stuff. And you know, when you're dealing with weather like we have right now, this week's been a mix of everything from high-powered rifles to fly rods to walleye fishing for me. So it's been a fun week here in Colorado as well.
Now let's talk about that a little bit. I think, as I mentioned, you were talking to Karen, and when I introed the show, we've had it's been a year where you throw your notebook away because we started out and it stayed cold and wet and rainy all the way through June. We didn't get a 90-degree day till the last couple days of June, which is really unusual, and it was extremely cold and wet, so the bait didn't spawn at the same time. The fish movements were way behind. Then all of a sudden, it decided to be 90 to 100 for 2 months and go into September. Now it's going to start getting back more seasonal in the 70s and 80s, but normally by this time, the water has started to cool. So we really have seen a year of just having to go out and discover what the conditions are.
Well, yeah, I mean, the lake, Horseshoe Reservoir, is still 74 plus degrees, and they're still running water in it. It's coming back up, and it's just been so weird this year. I produced a television show called Junk Fishing because we have literally had to scrap everything I know for 15 years of guiding here and just go fishing. And if you take that mindset, you'll do fine. The fish are there; they're to be had, whether it be here or anywhere else. It's just a matter of you have to do it totally different. I was on Chatfield earlier this week, and we didn't do anything that I would have expected to do for this time of year at Chatfield, but we caught tons of fish. And so it's going to do it with an open mind. And I'm at Horseshoes right now looking around, and there is not a single yellow leaf on a cottonwood tree as far as the eye can see. And normally by this time of year, we've got significant yellow on the trees up here. So certainly the season is behind. However, the fish are there, and it's just a matter of fish with an open mind, and you'll catch them just fine.
Let's talk a little bit about you were at Chatfield. I'm going to make a guess, and I have no idea because I've been out of town and I haven't fished Chatfield. But normally you would have started to see the fish maybe schooling up a little bit, either settling into balls of bait or a little deeper water or even suspended. I'll bet they're still on structure.
Yeah, totally. We started off the morning with kind of a two-part deal. We started off the morning to do some bass fishing, and they just murdered a topwater bait, just absolutely murdered a topwater bait. And all the fish were spitting up crayfish. Go figure. And then we switched up about 9:30 or so in the morning once the sun got up good and high and went walleye fishing, and they were absolutely pinned to the bottom. And I mean pinned to the bottom. They were onesie-twosies, and we didn't catch anything any deeper than about 7 or 8 feet. And if your jig left the bottom, they were using a jig head with a gulp pinched crawler on it, a little gulp, you know, fake crawler deal, a little stubby, and it floats, and put that on a jig head, pin it to the bottom, and just drag it around. And if it left the bottom at all, you would not get a bite. If you kept it pinned to the bottom, had good line control and depth control, made sure your lure's on the bottom the whole time, you'd catch them no problem. So, for sure, it felt a lot more like an earlier summer bite, and certainly I would expect them to be around bait balls. We did not see a single bait ball on the grass the whole day on the lake either. There is certainly not the amount of shad there used to be in Chatfield right this minute. And I'm sure they'll come back. They always do. But right now there's not the number of shad that's normally there.
Well, that does a couple things. It does move the fish, and between the weather conditions and the bait balls, we know that those fish, so now we got an idea where to get them. I think, too, a couple things happen at Chatfield. Chatfield's a little colder than, like, Cherry Creek. It was cold late into the year. I think we lost some fish last fall. There's some bait fish, and I think we didn't get the spawns we normally would have got because of the weird weather, but I think what that does, the fish are still healthy, and I'll ask you to verify that. But I think it just means they're hungry, too.
Yeah, for sure. They looked fine. None of the fish looked like they were starving. And truthfully, we didn't catch any giants of either species, but we caught big numbers of both and had a really fun day and caught some decent ones of both of them. But, yeah, they look fine. They're adaptable, and there's some bait fish in there. But that lake has historically got a ton of shad in it. And keep in mind, when I say bait fish, as we've discussed in the past, it could also be bluegills and crappies and perch and everything else that they would eat. It doesn't have to be the shad, but normally there would be big giant balls of shad in that lake, and that is not the case right now. But the fishery will come back without question. Water temperature down there was still hovering right around 70, 71 degrees. And with the amount of nutrients that run into that lake, there's no question the shad will be back in years to come, without a doubt.
Oh, that's going to be a much higher water level lake, too, very shortly.
Yeah, it will. And I think that's going to be interesting for sure. That was part of the reason I wanted to get down there, was kind of get a look at it where it's at right now, just to get a good feel for what it's going to look like once it inundates. And when we get back down there, then I'm really looking forward to that. It'll be a unique opportunity for anglers to have basically a new lake syndrome for a couple of years there. I think it's going to be really good. So that should be good. But, another place I was this week, Terry, was up in Cooter Canyon. And I know you've got a lot of fly guys that like to listen. If you want to go just absolutely slaughter fish as far as with a fly rod, go to Cooter Canyon right now, and you won't have no problem doing that. We decided to do a quick rundown on how many different ways we could catch fish in 100 yards of river. So I caught fish on 9 different lures and about 8 different flies, ranging from a size 24 disco midge all the way up to a size 4 grasshopper. And everything from a Berkeley bullet pop to a swim bait to inline spinner to marabou jig, a Troy ties, you name it. The fish are extremely cooperative in Cooter Canyon, and it feels like summer. The flows are great. There's 220 CFS flowing down the river. Water's crystal clear, and fish were just jumping on anything that looked edible. So fun trip.
I'm glad you brought that up, because all the things we talked about, it's been a much different year for the rivers, too, and the fly fishermen, because what we've had, we've had great cool water flows all through the summer. I mean, the water almost never quit flowing, and the fish are healthy compared to last year when we were being careful because the water got so warm. We waited till it cooled late in the fall, and because those fish are so healthy, they're hungry and active. We also had something else you mentioned. We had because of the weather, we had a tremendous influx of grasshoppers. Grasshoppers have been everywhere this year, and I love that when it gets to fall, especially when the browns are getting aggressive like they are on the Pooter. Somebody who's beginning to learn to fly fish, the grasshopper, a hopper dropper, you don't have to lay it on the water with incredible finesse. It's okay to make a splash. You can see it in the water very easily, like you said, because you can use good-sized ones, and you can still drag a little nymph of various times. I like a copper john. I don't know if you were doing a nymph, but what a great time for the beginning fly fisherman to go out there and really learn about dry fly fishing.
Oh yeah, without question. And I mean, geez, I caught them, Terry. So what does that tell you? They were very, very cooperative. The grasshopper that I chose, it's some kind of, I don't even know what it's called, but it's made out of foam. It's got giant rubber legs. It's bright yellow with a white trim on it. It looks more like a bass lure. And some of the browns and rainbows were hitting that thing so hard that they were coming clean out of the water to grab it. And I was purposely slapping it down to get their attention. So I was overpowering my cast and slapping that thing on the surface of the water just to get their attention. And they'd come and just nuke it. And it was really fun. So it got so crazy that I'm like, well, we better try this with a Berkeley bullet pop. So I got a full-size smallmouth popper out and started working that river. It took me about 3 casts to smoke a real nice brown with it. So, you know, they're just giddy at this point. So, yeah, if you want to learn to fly fish, you want to get your string pulled a bunch, go up there right now. I rotated through, I think, four different nymphs just to see. I went from a black one to a white one actually did use a copper john at one point, and they hit all of them. So, like I said, I think they're more just, you know, when I was talking to a buddy of mine, he says, what were they biting? I said, a good drift. Anything you drifted, if it drifted well, they'd eat it.
Yeah, I think you're going to find on rivers like the Pooter, the Big Thompson, you know, you don't have to drive a long way. Clear Creek, Bear Creek, in town here is going to have that same bite going on because the grasshoppers are still everywhere. And they will bite after the grasshoppers go away because they still have a memory of it. Rocky Mountain National Park is going to be great. And I think if you do want to go to like the Arkansas or the Colorado, I think we're probably not at the big brown bite where you throw the stupid huge looking streamers, but I bet that grasshopper would take a lot of fish. Any other bites, Chad? We're a little over, but I'm going to make up for it at the end because it's just going to be me talking at the end of the hour, so we can steal a little time and I'll still have plenty of time for parks. Was there anything else going on you want to make sure you tell the folks about?
Well I think the biggest thing to keep in mind right now is to get out. This is the time of year that we really need to get out and enjoy it, because it doesn't really matter where you go fish right now, from Cherry Creek to Chatfield to Boyd Lake, to Horsetooth, to any of the rivers. Everybody I'm talking to is catching fish. I know the ponds are fishing well. So, you know, just be open-minded and get out, you know. The other thing is, big game seasons are coming. If you're rifle hunting later this year, get behind your gun now. I've been behind my gun a bunch, getting a bunch of practice in, and now's the time to do that as well. It's a great time to be in Colorado.
All right, my friend, thank you. You and I have to get on the water soon, and I've been, Dan Swanson and I talked about it, I've been traveling so much I haven't fished around here enough. We got to remedy that.
Well, Dan's on the lake right now. He's out in my boat, actually, and he's coaching the Junior Bassmaster State Championship right now. So wish Dan good luck. And I got to go help my buddy Eric. I shot a real nice bull elk this morning, and so I'm going to go help him out.
All right. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care.
Chad LaChance, always a great contributor. We're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, we're going to take you to a state park that's got a great event coming up. They do every year. It's fantastic. Plus, there's good fishing opportunities and hunting opportunities right there. All that and more on Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank. Banking for good.